Accession number 13732, Real 3.
About the VIP flights and the conditions on board and so on.
Well, it's quite pleasant. I a special loo and special Beverly seats and VIP steward and, well, anything you wish for, virtually, on a trip of that nature.
Do they have a special porter cabin inside?
Yes, oh, that's right. A small porter cabin, yes. And special seats, and it's relatively pleasant. There was a few extra people on. I can't remember how many there were. I think there was about 19, in fact. Because I remember on the prodding with the whole flight deck was full. I mean, you couldn't move.
Oh, with all your passengers watching.
Yes. And some of them didn't really know exactly what to expect, because I don't think they'd been adequately briefed. Mr. Heseltine thought that you had a line about a mile long and you just sort of fed it on to the end of this probe, and he was quite amazed when the actual aircraft was right in front of you, about a matter of a few feet away. Let's go into a bit more detail. There was three Victors involved, three Victor tankers with one in reserve, two C-130 tankers, and I think there was one of the reserve. There was one of the reserve as well.
Another Hercules.
Yes, that's right. And the long-range Hercules with a couple of extra tanks. The total involved was about 400,000 pounds of fuel. So that the long-range freighter could land with maximum amount of fuel, 62,000 pounds. So, should the landing be couldn't be made, it could return direct to Ascension. In fact, the previous trip to there, I just noticed that I carried Captain Barker, of great note, from the Endurance, if you remember him. Wonderful fellow. And one of the other trips was Sir, the Governor.
Rex Hunt.
Rex Hunt and his wife. I don't know if he took his wife. I certainly talked to Sir Rex a couple of times. Often wondered why we were so busy with the Falklands, but he said we would make it would be worth our while in the long run. And I see they've now found lots of oil down there, plus our segment of the Antarctic and the minerals.
Gary General Spacey, you remember him?
No.
He took over from Jeremy Morse.
No, I didn't meet him at all. In fact, what
was it? A neighbour of mine at one
point. Oh, that's a pity. Well, in fact, when we were down there, we just set up the. I was about a few days later than the rest of the two crews. They set up our camp just to the. I think it was the south of the runway. There was a couple of tents. And I arrived, and we were taboo. Various people came, Margaret Thatcher and various other dignitaries, and. They weren't allowed to visit us in the Hercules detachment.
Why not?
Because we were in tents and everybody else had porter cabins and things.
So you load of scraps or something?
Well, apparently, yes. Yeah.
Who stopped them? Are they CNC or what?
I don't know. In fact, one of the dignitaries, what's that aircraft? They said, it's a Hercules. That's one of your aircraft. Oh, I didn't know that was here. But in fact, what we did was we lived in the tents for 2 days, and then we went back to Rangatira, which was a very unstable boat, which was due for scrapping, I think. It was a turbine electric vessel, but it was in the harbour there, and we used to live on board that for the night, and then swap and come ashore on one of the little boats, and then come to work. It was quite interesting. We had Christmas and New Year out there, and it was terrific fun.
You didn't get round the island at all, I suppose, because of the mines, did you?
Well, I walked as far as the Stanley itself a couple of times, but it was a bit dodgy walking around there. In fact, they found out one of those nasty bombs on our golf course after we'd been there about a month or two. So we did do a little bit of walking until we found that we'd been straight through a minefield one day out to the lighthouse, and decided that probably wasn't a good idea. So, in fact, Nowadays, people go all over the island and go visiting various little settlements and things. But the first 3 months I was there, we didn't see anything like that. Penguins was about the nearest friendly foe, I think.
What about the natives? Were they friendly?
Didn't see any, really. We went down to a pub in town, not while I was there. Apart from the night I came home, then we stopped the Upland Goose for the night. As far as I know, they were very friendly, but up to that particular time, I should think they were particularly very, very friendly. But on the ship, we didn't see them. And then nobody came up to our camp while I was there. I mean, it's a different kettle of fish now.
Before we leave it, tell me a bit more about your flight and your steward from the Chablis.
Well, yes, apart from we couldn't find the steward to begin the flight.
This was a dissension, wasn't it?
Yeah, he got lost, and when we did find him, subsequently we found out he'd lost his wallet and trousers and whatever. But he produced the necessary goods for the VIPs, the Chablis, and their slippers and all the good things.
They had a microwave to cook the supper, did they, or what?
I think that was done the normal way, in the oven. I don't know what they ate, to be fair. He went down a treat with sort of Peter Harding and Michael Hastine. They had a photograph taken, and he was the boy that day.
How many trips down to the Falklands did you do?
I don't know. I spent about a year on detachments at Falklands, 3 months in the Falklands, and all the other detachments at Ascension. So, I did about 2,000 hours down there.
And flying tankers all the time?
And freighters.
And freighters.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Ambidextrous.
Yeah. It became very routine then.
It was, really.
In flight refueling and so on after.
That still had a little bit of excitement. Now, particularly one day when there was a bit of an error. And we nearly had the back end of a Victor, because we weren't expecting the manoeuvre he did, and there was no avoiding it. Just missed him by a pure chance. But it didn't happen again. Words were spoken. But that was quite frightening. Yeah. Well, it was for the other people, because at least I had a manner of control. At least I thought. But the other people just sat and watched. And then they were the crew.
The back of the Victor.
No, well, they can't see anything. Yeah. Our crew in the front, and we just missed his tail as we ripped out and lost the probe.
What about making contact with tankers, or do you fly within inside of each other?
Well, it's got some interesting bits of airmanship in this. I was down there one day, and this freighter was in front of me. Well, as I was his refueling station, most people stay behind the refueling station because it seems like a good idea. But he disappeared in the distance, and the TACAM was going, the air-to-air TACAM was going bigger, 100 miles and plus. And he rang up and said, can you go any faster? I said, yeah, I'll dump your fuel. Because we're too heavy, we were far heavier than him. Yeah, you could see a Thinks bubble in the distance. And then he thought, where's your PNR? I said, well, with your fuel on board, it's about overhead, or very close to Stanley.
What's PNR?
For the position of no return.
Oh, yeah.
And at which point, the distance started decreasing, because he worked out that I'd got his fuel by there. Which was fairly obvious from the time of takeoff. Right? But there was some amazing lack of thought sometimes. Normally, you stayed roughly in contact. I mean, sometimes it's impossible in the cloud if you're you had to keep a distance. And sometimes it was very difficult, because one of the RVs was orphaned in a bunch of cloud. And you go hurtling around this, trying to avoid it, sometimes in contact and sometimes in cloud in contact, which is a bit exciting.
But you can talk to each other.
Yeah, yeah. That doesn't help very much. he might tell you you've got to turn right or left, which is rather helpful, in fact, yeah.
But in that situation, I mean, had he given you too much of his fuel? I mean, was he in danger of not...
The one I was telling you about was that he was just a freighter.
Oh, he was?
Yeah. He had no spare fuel. Another occasion I was down there and they wanted an early RV. I said, well, I'll just check on that. Because you could only put a certain amount of fuel in a hole. And if you haven't burnt the fuel off, you can't put it in. And there was no way. So I checked up and he said, yeah, I want an hour early. So I said, are you sure? He said, yeah. So I did what he wanted, because I'm only there to oblige. But the fact was that he'd made a mistake. They'd plotted the graph wrong. I mean, they were an hour out. Which it was evident. I mean, everybody knew that. Should have done. But we had a few errors, but luckily no disastrous results out of them. As far as I know, anyway. Because it is a common sense, most of it, isn't it?
RV stands for what?
Rendezvous.
Sorry?
Rendezvous. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a standard. I mean, within 5 minutes, it was the same every day. We got a computer readout, all modern stuff. Didn't really need it after a few days. And unless it was a very difficult one, like the one I was talking about earlier, by the Secretary of State, you knew within 5 minutes, within 3 hours, 45 minutes, and whatever the other one was, 6 hours, 7 hours. It was always the same, within a few knots, a few minutes, because the winds were fairly steady.
Were there any cases of a missed rendezvous on those flights?
Yeah, there was the odd one or two. Not many, though. I think the only ones I remember, I didn't have one, but they couldn't find the other aircraft. See, one of the big problems was, if with the Hercules, we just went chugged along together. Tanker, freighter. Two tankers, freighter. But for Victors, they used to take off an hour or two after us. Well, normally they could locate us. We'd transmit and they'd pick us up and home in on us. But the odd occasion with the Hercules to Hercules, if we lost one another in cloud, sometimes we couldn't find ourselves or the other one. Now, why? I don't know.
But no one came down the drain.
No, very lucky. I mean, the amount of hours spent over there, it's quite incredible. Well, according to the records, we should have had lost several, shouldn't we? I think the whatever it's called the book says. I mean, we're very, very lucky. And particularly as we were operating out of Stanley off a short, very short runway, slippery. Although the AM2 matting isn't meant to be that slippery, but after of considerable use on ice and a bit of snow and sometimes, very slippery. And narrow, and we were operating at maximum all up weights out of there every day. That changed about 4 months after I got there. Somebody says, well, why are we operating at such heavy weights? I said, well, we don't need to, do we? And that was quite true, we didn't really. So then it was got a bit safer that way.
How do you mean, why didn't you have to operate such heavy weights?
Well, if we took off to fuel a few Phantoms around the Falklands, I said, well, you don't need all that fuel. They can fly for less time, or you give them less fuel. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's quite logical, eventually. I mean, I thought it was great fun. I stayed for as long as we could. But logically, we didn't need to. So it became a lot safer then. Because it was, even the Harriers were parked right adjacent to the runway. And I was there one day when the, I was in another good incident. I don't know, I found his name on the Phantom.
He's a naval Phantom, isn't he? RAF ones.
Yeah, RAF one. Yeah. And it was a demonstration for another Minister of Defence or somebody. And the weather was real nasty. So I was on standby that day, so I thought, well, something's going to happen today. And OC Ops rang me up and said, we're doing this thing today, would you like to stand by? I said, we are. So we got in the aircraft, because I knew there was going to be a cock-up. Anyway, old Squire took off in his Phantom to demonstrate. Well, he disappeared at about 100 feet in this nasty weather. And he eventually comes back to land in front of the, I think it was Minister for him. And he's overweight. Well, the barrier, the protein wire came straight out of the ground. And off he went. Of course, they want somebody to refuel them now, don't they? So we got airborne.
He did a bolter, did he?
Yeah. Well, there's nothing, no way he was going to stop. Yeah. And so we nipped off on. Because, well, there's nothing they can do. If they're not a tanker airborne, they're going to eject sometime. But say they've done a few times down there.
But he had so little fuel, he couldn't just go around again.
He had so much fuel, but he couldn't see them. The weather was about 50 foot cloud banks. Yeah. And he cheated. Well, he just got in a bit.
Couldn't he dump his fuel?
He still want to got in. Well, he's a bit. I shouldn't think he would want to do that in case he didn't get another. Because yeah, he's got to wait for us to get airborne and get some more, should he need to. In fact, he didn't need another thing. No, sometimes it was quite exciting down there, but mostly it was fairly quiet. Apart from the odd scramble for a civilian going down on an airway. That could have been a bit disastrous. They thought he was an enemy coming inbound.
Who was he?
He's on the mainland, coming down an airway.
Oh, really? Yes, on the eastern coast.
Yeah. Misidentified somehow.
Yeah.
And the few exercises we did down there were quite horrific. I won't go into those details because I don't think we learned anything from them. The communications was amazing, or lack of. Particularly, we had a problem with communication with Navy. You'd go up and have an update before you went flying of where everybody was. But you'd find that was probably a day or so ago, and despite the slow speed of ships, they do change places quite a lot. The other thing we used to do is drop down to Gritvigan in the South Georgia to do the mail drop. Well, that was particularly interesting. I went round with the boss the first time. I don't know if even we dropped. The wind was so horrific. Got inside the harbour there, and the wind, the airspeed was at plus or minus 50 knots. I don't think we dropped that day, but I did go down there with the chief met officer and the padre one day, and it was absolutely beautiful. Not surprising, I suppose.
You had the padre with you?
Yeah, and the chief met man. Yeah, lovely fella. We flew around. It's a lovely island. Absolutely magnificent.
There's no landing strip on it, though.
Well, I was going to mention that, actually. There was I went down another trip. They were looking at building a landing strip on Salisbury Plain. And Endurance had taken, I think it was, no, Hecate. HMS Hecate had taken one of the RAF guys down to have a look at this place. And we got in there. Well, a bit of help from our own radar. And to have a look at this place. And they said they'd put a mark out for us. And normally it's an A or a J. As we approached it, this letter started moving. It was a bunch of penguins. They subsequently never built this landing strip because they reckon they need an IGS, a similar quality as they have in Hong Kong to get in there. And in fact, the day we got in there, we wouldn't have got in there with that. We got in by our own radar with a bit of sense, but.
So you just did drops all the time?
It's absolutely, yeah.
And how many hours did it take from Fort Stanley down there?
It's quite. It must be in 5 or 6, I think. I can't remember. I'll look it up in a minute.
6 hours each way?
I think it was something like that. The tragic thing about one day was that they went down there and dropped the mail, and the ship brought the mail back some days, months later. And subsequent drop. The mail that they just come back from South Georgia was the mail they dropped back at South Georgia a month later, which didn't go down at all well.
I'm sure it didn't.
So I can't remember going. South Georgia. How long that took. Must have been about 5 hours.
Was it picking up mail? I mean, you snatched it, did you?
Or? We didn't. No, they just brought it by ship.
Oh,
but
I see.
The only days down there, they did in fact do that picking up stuff from Stanley by hook. In fact, I've got a photograph of my stepfather-in-law where they were doing the same thing in 1920 in the Middle East with a hook from a biplane. Exactly the same. Mm. I'm just looking to see how long it did take, because it's just out of interest, because I can't remember. That was... We just took this a minute.
Trying to pause.
Yeah. South Georgia was in fact just 3.5 hours each way. Right, I suppose we had a look at a few icebergs, and some magnificent icebergs, I'm sure, and stress one could land on there without any trouble, on the flat, big flat ones. What else can we down here around the place? It's interesting transport in the bay there. There was various little things. Oh, we haven't touched on the coastal, have we?
What's that?
And this is I think it was invented somewhere in Norway for the oil rigs, and it was the new hotel that was sailed into Stanley on a huge vessel, and it is a combination of ISO containers welded together, so you've just got a bunch of containers, very nicely furnished and everything, and it was on the top of on the deck of this great ship, which brought it into the harbour, and then I think it flooded itself and they floated this thing off.
Semi-submersible?
Well, it was on a barge, in fact, itself. Mm. So the other thing must have been another barge underneath it, I suppose. I was airborne when it came in. I'll show you some pictures in a minute. And they anchored it out there and waiting to build a platform to move it in beside the quay. Now this was going to be was the big hotel for RAF, Navy and Army. And I was going back one day and the weather changes so radically there. I was on the end of the pier waiting for the little boat to take me to the Rangatira. And I was going across the Rangatira and this mighty wind blew up, 40, 50 knots, just like that. And they'd just been moving the coastal, this huge great thing, with flat sides to it. Well, the string broke, and off it went, by itself. And it shortly would have broken up on the shore. Luckily, one of the small tugs went and threw another piece of string, and they lassoed it eventually. But it was amazing their progress, this thing, mate, because it goes straight and flat into wind, and off. That's where everybody lived for the next year or so.
How did you spell that?
Coastal, just like C-O-A-S-T-E-L.
The Coast Hotel, in other words.
I suppose it was. I never thought of that. there was a English bloke, a friend who was the bargee of it, a bargee of a hotel, amazing. But facilities were excellent. Compared with the tents and things. Not as much fun as a tent, but and then they brought in several more during the course of the next year, and I think the Army had one, the RAF had one. I don't know. I think the other one was mixed. I don't know what they've done with them since. I think they brought them back for use with oil rigs.
Well, then presumably Mount Pleasant was being built at this time.
That's
anyway.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And. Did you ever fly into Mount?
Oh yes, I was one of the first to go in there. Well, from. On the air bridge, yeah, I went in with my flight commander, squadron commander. It's just been almost been finished building. Then it was a state of a bit of a morass. It's very good now, I believe.
But you still had to do the refuel flight from Ascension.
They did then. Subsequently, they just go across to Recife, I think it is, and then Recife down. Or the TriStar does it direct. Mm. I think the TriStar's stopped doing it now, and I think it's. I'm not sure.
Virgin does a lot of charter work.
Could well be. And in fact,
they fly 747s in there.
Oh, a lot of people made a lot of money out of the war. heavy lift made a killing.
With
Belfast, down they bought an extra one or two out of that, going down to Ascension. British Airways were having a ball going into Ascension, and they lived down in Georgetown. But they got an awful lot of money for it. I think it's £100 a night for a hard line, which was a little different to what we got.
So when did you finish at the Falklands? Did it go on for quite some time, long after the conflict?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's still running there.
Yeah.
I only did a couple more years, about 84, 85, I think it was. Yeah. But then, the interesting bit was over as far as I was concerned. They had lots of admin people down there, and always getting a bit normal when they moved to Mount Pleasant. With a big runway, and all that goes with that.
All mod cons?
Well, certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a bit more fun, a bit more adventurous when we had television and no, like I said, when we were in tents and no television, they made a bit of our own fun. It was quite interesting. Because a lot of people in the Air Force, I don't think, have ever been away from home, have they, nowadays? Mm. The years unaccompanied is a thing of the past. I think it's shown up a few problems.
Yeah. I gather there was a drink problem down there at one time.
Well, when we were...
Something I picked up in the press, but I don't...
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. In our tents, there was... we were on standby, there was virtually none. A bit on the ship, on the day off. Mm. I don't know, I should think it could well have been on the... I don't know, I haven't heard anything so much on... a problem down there. Might have been. I don't know, they've had fights and things, so the army and waylaid Air Force people and things. I haven't experienced anything like that myself.
So that's really the extent of your Falklands experience then?
Yeah, as far as I can remember. I'll show you a few photographs in a minute, which might be of interest. Yeah. Yeah, in a nutshell, yeah.